This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 440 in the series. This session of the radio show shares my conversation with conservation agent Jen Delmore. We had a conversation via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. Links to our key topics covered are included in the show notes. The recording runs about 32 minutes. So let's listen to my conversation with Jen as we talk about Delcart and other things, conservation. Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet at WFPR.FM and on the local Franklin area dial at 102.9 in the old-fashioned way. Today's session, we've got Jen Delmore from the Franklin Conservation, actually the Franklin Conservation Agent. I was going to say commission, but you're just a piece of that. You're the agent. You're in charge.
Yes.
Welcome, Jen.
Thank you for having me, Stephen. I'm excited to get my voice out there and just have a conversation with you about what's going on in the conservation department and hopefully answer some questions that I get from residents quite often and make their lives easier in dealing with the conservation department.
Absolutely. And I know certainly as a frequent walker through Delcott, that was the one thing that prompted me to reach out, and because I knew you were going to have the info. But before we even go there, since this is our first time and people may not have heard you before, who's Jen? Where is she from? Give us a little bit of background as to your background and your role as conservation agent. What do you do for those who don't know what you do?
Yeah, so I actually got my biology degree from UMass Amherst and graduated in 2014. And then I worked for an engineering firm for 4 years as their wetland scientist before I came to Franklin. And currently I actually live in Taunton. So I did live in Franklin for a year before Taunton, but I wasn't as familiar with the town. You know, so it's taken me some time to get used to the streets and everything. But so in May of 2019 is when I applied for the position and luckily got it, which I was very excited about. There was a time in my life, you know, where I was looking for something that would really make me happy, you know, a career that I can really get behind and that would, you know, challenge me and kind of give me some fulfillment. I've always loved nature, and being on the conservation side of things, I think is better for me than being on the development side. But you know, and I'm still seeing a lot of development, and sometimes it's a little painful, but I'd rather, you know, be on the side of the table, if you will, that is making sure things are getting done right, and, you know, helping the environment. So I came to Franklin in May 2019, and I've been here ever since, working from home for the last almost a year now.
Because of the pandemic.
But yeah, so I'll just, I guess I can go over kind of what I do in the conservation agent role, if you'd like.
Yeah. So what's kind of like is there a typical day? Do you have a particular routine? Chloe, I know, like every 2 weeks or so, there's a conservation commission meeting, where various approvals or permits or whatever are applied for, but I'm sure there's more to do than just that one session.
Right. Yeah, than just the meetings. Typically I work Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and there are certain things that I get done on certain days relative to the meetings, like posting the agenda.
Agendas, yep.
Right, and getting the agent report ready for the commissioners, and that's accessible to the public as well, so that they can kind of see my notes on each project that's on the agenda for each meeting. So I'll be posting the agenda, getting that ready. And the agent report includes kind of notes from if I go to the site and do a site visit on each project, anything that's been done from the time the filing was submitted to the meeting, you know, if I've had correspondence with the applicant or not, and just the general facts and notes on the project go into that as well. Now the commissioners get a packet before each meeting, a week before each meeting, so that they can review each project and all, you know, all of the plans. There's a couple of different types of filings. I don't know if you want me to get into which, how many different types of filings they are and what they're called at this point.
I don't know that we need to go into kind of the deep dive. Certainly we could make this as an ongoing series if you want, but at least to give the short story in terms of some of the types of filings, and then there'll be enough interest generated so that people can, really take that deep dive if they want to.
Okay. Yeah. I'll get into that. So I'll kind of go over that into it in a second, but in terms of my daily duties, that prepping for a meeting and going over the current projects is one portion of it, but then it's all the projects that have been approved in the past are also still there, so I'm going to sites and checking the erosion control that was installed and making sure that they're submitting any reporting requirements that were issued under the order of conditions, making sure they recorded the order that they were issued by the commission, generally following up with the applicants on what's going on with their projects and making sure everything's getting done correctly. That's a portion of it as well. And then actually a large portion of my day-to-day, which I didn't see this coming when I started the position, was there are a lot of emails that people send with questions and how do I do this? Do I need to get involved with conservation to do that? Mm-hmm. So a lot of my time is spent just answering questions and, going through those emails, helping people. It might be something quick and it could be something that I end up needing to go to their home and checking out the situation. If there's a complaint, and they say, oh, can you come over and just take a look at this in my yard? I end up doing those kinds of things as well.
Sure.
In person, wearing a mask, of course.
Yes. Socially distanced and all the protocols. Absolutely. Yeah. That's, if anything, the pandemic, I'm sure, has kind of complicated your work and made it a little bit more challenging, but it's still work. And whether it's visits required or meetings required, the business still goes on.
Yes, exactly. In the beginning of the pandemic, we were, not sure what was going on, and took a lot of time to kind of figure out how to handle it, how to get everything switched to the most, being electronic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But now it's, we're kind of in a routine now. Most people, and I feel they're where people would have called before, they tend to email now because working from home, the calls just go to my email anyway. So if anyone's looking to get in touch with me, sending an email is just the same as calling and leaving a voicemail. So
sounds good. And for regular listeners, or maybe for new listeners, if you're not aware, some of the towns switch from in-person business in the municipal building, switching almost overnight, although it did take some time for more departments to go totally virtual. That did occur, and there's multiple episodes of the Talk Franklin sessions that I have with our town administrator, Jamie Helen, as we walk through a number of the changes. And the one key one that everything still touts, and it's certainly a benefit that, when they call, if they don't know, and they call, and then the voice gets translated into text and becomes an email for you. And then you can follow up with the individual, and now they've got your email so that you can have that correspondence going forward. Yeah, there's nothing, when the technology works, there's a lot of goodness with it.
Yeah, I mean, their voicemails, I do hear their voice, but luckily it tells me their phone number, which sometimes in the past when people leave messages and they don't leave their phone numbers, but now,
then how do you know?
Yeah, exactly. The number is there now, so I can call them back.
Information, yes.
Yep. But
indeed.
Yeah, so that was a challenge, but it's going okay. There was, more work, surprisingly, in the summer when we were trying to figure out everything with all how to, change the meetings to be virtual and
Right.
how we were going to handle taking filings. And I created more work. So it was, it's go, go, go all the time because you have to get all these normal tasks done on top of COVID, which everyone, I'm sure.
Yeah. And then you had some pent up work that was kind of held while things got figured out. So, you had to kind of get through that backlog. And now hopefully it's kind of almost business as usual in this new world.
Yeah. For the most part, we've fallen into a routine. There's a couple little things that keep changing that you need to try and hammer out, but that's going to keep happening until
The vaccines are fully here and we can start going back to whatever this new normal is.
Exactly.
Indeed. Good. So Delcart in particular, that's one project I know that had come through, got some funding to handle the invasive species. And I know when I'd walked through probably in January of 20, so I think it was after the first year of the applications, the pond looked really, really clean. And yet during the summer, the invasive species is still there. So what's the status? I understand it was going to be a multi-year project anyway, but did the pandemic kind of hinder that, or where are we in the status?
Yeah, so they started in 2016 was when the project kind of kicked off. And I'll go over the two species that are being targeted. So we have variable milfoil and then the water chestnut.
Right.
Which there are two different types of chemicals they've been applying. And these chemicals are kind of targeting, they wait until the species has grown up and you can see it, and then they'll spray the leaves. And the thing they're trying to do is to get the plant not to drop new seeds. And then next year, the seeds that are in the seed bank, at the bottom of the pond, they'll come up again, they spray them again. And with the hopes that each year there'll be less and less seeds in the seed bank.
Mm-hmm.
So recently we had a meeting with Solitude Lake Management, who are contracted by the town to do the treatments. And then they have the ESS group doing the monitoring.
Okay.
So we had a meeting with them about, what's going on, because it seems like you said, is it working? Is there something we could do differently? How long is this gonna, are we going to need another contract? Are we gonna have to keep treating after this contract's up? So we're waiting on kind of some more answers from them. They had told us they'll provide a more robust report and maybe some, an option on a different type of treatment that just came out. I think it was last year that a new type of treatment was invented that targets the root system as well. So,
okay.
But there has been a difference between, 2017 when they initially, their monitoring reports show that the water chestnut and milfoil have gone down significantly since the first year of treatment.
Yep.
And at our meeting last week, Jeff Livingston was actually saying that he thinks there's a huge difference from what it was to what it looks like today. Although that it is still there, it's definitely better.
Yep.
In the last, let's see, it's going on 4 years now.
At so least three we have a anyway. Plan. Yeah. Yeah. In my own observation, I would concur. It does seem better. It's not as pervasive. It used to be you could almost think of walking on the water with the leaves. Now there's at least gaps in the water, so there is less. But I was kind of led to believe that over the 2 years, or whatever the time was, there was going to be that much more. So that's why it's like, where are we? How is it? So it's good to hear that at least it is working. That confirms, but we're not done yet.
Right. Yeah. It's a battle. I don't think the goal is not total eradication. That's kind of an impossible goal.
Mm-hmm.
For most invasive species. So
right.
the goal is to get it to a point with the treatments that maybe it could be handled by going out there once a year in a John boat and pulling up the few plants that you see. But we've got this year, the summer of 2021 planned to continue treatment. And then it's looking like we'll have at least one treatment in 2022 as well. But like I said, Solitude's going to be getting back to us with kind of, their game plan for what they think we should do moving forward and how successful everything's been.
Right.
So we can make a decision of, if we need to continue this or if we can, take over with the John Bow. And ideally the end goal, is to be able to stop the treatments and then stock the pond with fish at some point. So
right.
We just needed to get it to a point that, that's doable. But I'm hopeful that in the next couple of years that'll happen, but we just can't, stop treating and not do anything and just let it sit, because it'll just go back to being what it was if all treatment and care is kind of halted.
Yeah. And for the fishermen and folks amongst us, clearly there is some fishing there. I'd see people on a fairly regular basis, but you don't want to stock until the treatments effectively are done, because that could hinder the fishing population anyway.
Right.
So patience on that side is required. Another piece that's related to that, and beavers have been fairly prevalent there as well.
Yep. I know. I have had a lot of calls about beavers in Franklin. They just love Franklin.
They do. There's a lot of water here.
Yeah. They, they're in a lot of streams and wetland systems. I really should start a map and, mark on it where I see the
beaver sightings.
Yeah, exactly. Because you can tell where they've been because of the trees. And then obviously the places that have dams.
The lodges. Yep.
Yep. But it'd be interesting to see exactly where they are in town on a map. That's not a bad idea for a new goal.
Yeah. A beaver from of contact tracing.
Yep.
Was this beaver family the one that spread over there? How do we know? Well.
Yeah. That's even more intense. I was thinking just, putting an X on a map.
Just finding out where they are.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, exactly. How many wetland systems are they in? Because we get a lot of calls of, people that are concerned their backyards are about to flood or the road's about to flood. So we deal with a lot of that through either a notice of intent filing, or sometimes it's an emergency certification, which the Board of Health has to order if it's a threat to public safety. So,
and my conversations with Kathleen Liberty, that's one of the things that she has acknowledged, that, people don't necessarily think of Board of Health, but they have to do beavers too.
Yeah, it's a team effort, really, typically between DPW, Board of Health, and Conservation.
Sure.
Conservation will issue, if it's an emergency, then Conservation will issue the 30-day permit to breach the dam, because that's work within a wetland.
Mm-hmm.
So Conservation has to get involved, and then the trapping is Board of Health.
Right. Yep. Go team. Yes, indeed. Indeed.
Yeah.
So what else do you do? Besides meetings and Delcart, there's other projects, I know, something large or small or just in business.
Let's see. So I'm not sure if you know or not, but I'm 19 hours a week. So for the most part, it's assisting the Conservation Commission in current projects. Projects that have been approved and current projects. But then the other projects that are kind of most of the year are on the back burner, but then come up every now and then, are things like updating the open space spreadsheets. Just now that's trying to figure out what pieces of land would have the most value to the Conservation Commission, and just what I guess what their value as a piece of land is as well. If it's connected to other town-owned parcels and other open space, if they already have trails on them. A lot of lots that even are privately owned, I feel like typically have trails on them. People will just create trails by walking through the woods over and over, even if they weren't intended to be trails.
Yeah. Well, and since we were all at once, most of us at some point in time were farmland, certainly the farmers had their fields and stone walls and there were trails and roads and whatever. And now the trees are generally, well, at least from a farmland production perspective, they were cut down, but now they're all back mostly. Yeah. And that's why I think even from the hazard plan stats, I think 48% of the town land is forestry and another 10%+ is wetland. So that's more than half our land is in your realm.
Yep. I know Franklin's lucky that they've got, or I would say lucky that they have the Charles River. Some towns don't have that, like a great river resource. Mm-hmm. But they do. Franklin's got a lot of nice wetland areas, and we need to really work hard to keep them from getting destroyed. I know some people don't see it the same way, but they're just so important. And restoring any wetlands that were destroyed, or just not necessarily just destroyed, but kind of taking advantage of people putting, dumping whatever, their yard waste, if they're storing machinery and whatever it is in their backyard in the wetland, then we can't allow that, really. It seems harmless, but they're destroying plants by doing that and destroying habitat. So that's kind of one thing I look for when I'm out doing site visits. If I go, say someone's redoing their deck, but at the same time, you're looking at their deck area, but just kind of looking around at the wetland, make sure the wetland's healthy and that nothing's going on that shouldn't be going on in the wetland, and then also within 25 feet to the wetland, it is protected under the town bylaw. So
there's a definition around wetlands, the definition around some buffer zones. And that's one of the things I think you mentioned earlier, that you get some calls frequently about, how do I do this? What do I need to do this? Is there something I need to do? And that's one of the things that certainly we can help with in this session. And then if we need to do more, sharing that info, pointing the people to the right places in terms of, if you do have something and you are in a wetland or in a conservation zone of some sort, think before you do something, ask before you do something.
Right. Yeah. If you're not sure, it's better to call or email than to just do it and then, either end up in trouble or end up destroying habitat. But I can go over the buffer zones briefly and just, when you would have to get involved with conservation.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So
we've got basically wherever the wetland line is, wherever the wetland ends, you have 100 feet past that point that both the town and the state have jurisdiction over any activity. Whether it's something like putting a pool in, or if it's a much bigger project like putting a subdivision, through part of the buffer zone.
In an individual's perspective, if they're Title V with a septic system as well, I would think that would also be in this space, or clearly Board of Health has something in that space as well, too.
Yep. Updating septics are included. Those aren't exempt. So anything, or even, as minor as just taking down a couple of trees, would all be included in that 100-foot buffer zone that you would have to file with the local conservation commission. So if it's a minor project, like you want to redo your deck or take down a hazardous tree or two, put a pool in, things like that, we have a minor buffer zone activity filing that would be suitable for something like that. you know, it's less extensive. Most homeowners fill it out by themselves. It's a couple pages, some pictures, and then, you know, basically taking a map that we have online. The town assessor's website actually has
the GIS map. Maps,
right? So you can see your lot on there and use that as your kind of like your base map, and then just sketch on top of that, you know, where your new deck is going to be and where the wetlands are. So, you know, that's one type of filing that comes in handy for homeowners that just have small projects that are within the buffer zone. And then, so within the 100-foot buffer zone, and that zone, the state has jurisdiction over, but then the town has even more stringent regulations in the 25-foot and 50-foot buffer zone from the wetland. So within 25 feet to the wetland, you're not allowed to do anything, really. No disturbance whatsoever, no cutting, no building a shed in that area. And we know, you know, some people have, when they bought their homes that were built, you know, in the 70s prior to the Wetlands Protection Act.
So there's some grandfather situations.
Right, right. Their lawns are already there and, you know, whatever. That stuff, it's not like if I came to your house and saw that your lawn was in the 25-foot buffer zone, I'd say, hey, let that grow back, you know? But so we've got the 25-foot no touch, I call it sometimes. And then the 50-foot buffer zone is no impervious for new projects. So roads, and if you wanted to do like a concrete patio or something like that, typically we try and keep that outside the 50-foot buffer zone as well. So that's, you know, the buffer zones associated with wetlands. And then if you live near a perennial stream or a river, which a perennial stream is just a stream that flows year round, that has a 200-foot buffer zone
associated
with it. And usually with the rivers and streams like that, the first 100 feet is supposed to be left undisturbed. And then only 10% of the next 100 feet would be allowed to be disturbed. So that's, you know, even more stringent than the bordering vegetated wetlands regulation. Mm,
that requires a little bit more calculation, that's for sure.
Right, exactly. So, you know, that's what we're looking at for buffer zones. If people are, you know, homeowners are looking to do minor projects, I typically recommend the minor buffer zone activity application, which is on our website. All of the filings are on our website, instructions and forms and fees. The more robust projects, like if you're building a house, usually people are going to be looking to hire an engineering firm. And if you have wetlands on your property, you would might want to look for a multidisciplinary firm, like an engineer that also has a wetland scientist in their firm. Or even if I've seen firms that are environmental firms that handle the notice of intent filings, but you know, they've got to have somebody, an engineer, professional engineer has to be involved for the building. So, you know, they'll have to, I mean, that's up to the homeowner who they want to hire. We have a list of people on our website as well that are local, that have worked
recognized.
But so, you know, a bigger project, odds are you're going to have a wetland scientist and an engineer involved.
Good. That should be helpful for folks listening. And then, of course, if there's any questions, they can always reach out, either leave a message or email
of
you.
And, yep. Oh, yeah. I'm always happy to answer any questions. It's, you know, if you think, I just don't know, I don't know if it's a stupid question or not, just call or email me. It's fine. You know, It doesn't matter if it's a silly question or not. I'd rather have you reach out and just make sure, then just go ahead and do something, and then, you know, have it end up either getting you in trouble or you never know. You never know if your neighbors are going to call.
No. Be good, be kind, reach out, ask before.
Yeah. Yeah, do it the right way.
Well, this has been good and informative. We learned a little about you and your work and conservation relationship to the other teams in the town space with DPW and Board of Health, and certainly about Delcar. Anything else you need to add at this point?
I did want to say just one other thing about the storm debris. I know that, you know, in heavy storms,
yes,
we're seeing a lot of trees.
They don't happen here much.
I don't know.
Franklin storms have been particularly a hot topic recently.
Yeah, I know. The storms are just getting crazier and crazier. I just wanted to say that if you've got a tree that comes down, you've got 2 weeks to kind of clear the debris, cut it up, get it out of there. And just all you have to do is let me know. And then you've got 2 weeks to deal with it. So even if you're in that buffer zone, if the tree just, you know, hopefully it's not going to fall on anything important, but, you know, it comes down, just say, hey, Jen, I've got a tree that came down that storm last night, and we're going to be working on clearing the debris. You've got 2 weeks. The tree companies seem really busy lately. So, you know, if you can't get a hold of someone in 2 weeks, just, you know, give me a call and we can talk about it. While we're on the tree subject, if you have a hazardous tree that hasn't fallen in a storm, but you're worried about it, also give me a call. There's a way to deal with those too. Typically if it's outside the 25-foot buffer zone, should be a quick thing to help you out with. If it's within the 25-foot, we would just ask that, you know, you plant a tree, to replace it, but.
Okay. Something as simple as that. Yeah.
Yeah. Just to, you know, because I understand that if the tree is dying or if it's really top heavy towards the house and people are worried, you know, for their homes and their families, I certainly don't want to, you know, deny them removing the tree. But at, you know, the same point, planting another tree to replace that one, it's not going to be as big. But at least it's an effort.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, good. Well, welcome to Franklin. And now that we know each other, we may be able to do this again.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Let me know when you want to do another one. We could do any kind of segment on, you know, something more specialized in a particular subject, or even if we were to just do another interview later in the year as an update on Delcar or whatever, you know?
Sure. Yeah, that sounds good. Sounds good, particularly on Delcar, because that sounds like it's going to be, you know, a little bit more, the other company is going to come back with a little bit more detail on the report. So after the treatment this year, or maybe there's another treatment, or maybe there's a change in the treatments, and yeah, we can provide those updates because this is continuing to happen, even in this pandemic period, which at some point we'll get out of, hopefully.
And then once we do, we're going to be having the Delcar Earth Day cleanup at some point. We had to cancel it.
Yes.
This year, but we do, you know, we do want to have it, and, you know, we were all excited.
Yep.
And then it got canceled. So we're looking forward to a time where we can do that again, you know, and be safe about it. But I don't know when that's going to be. I don't want to say.
No, we won't hold you to commit to it, but yeah, we'll just hold that it'll happen at some time.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
Right. And actually we've got over at Delcar, while we're talking about Delcar, that new pavilion with the picnic tables is up too. So that's a nice spot to go and enjoy your lunch and, you know, just enjoy some nature.
Yeah, that was one of the things to get caught at the last moment, because I was walking through there, I think it was a Tuesday morning, and the Tri-County teacher and the students were there. We chatted. I gave him my card. I was going to come back on, I think it was Thursday or Friday. They were going to be picking up some info and finishing up, et cetera. And we got shut down. So we were supposed to meet and record while we were there, but nope. So, but yeah, the pavilion does look nice. Absolutely.
Yeah. And we managed to, there's a huge pine, I believe it's a pine tree right next to it that, you know, some people might notice that it's not perfectly centered, you know, over the concrete pad, but that's because that huge tree, we wanted to save the huge tree right there. So, you know, obviously we don't want to take down a tree of that size if it's not dying in a hazard that close to the pond. So I was happy that we were able to save it and just modify the pavilion around it. Well, that's the way I prefer, you know, everyone to think about nature when they're, when they have projects coming up, is not, you know, how much can I take down and fill in, but could I move my project slightly to save this, you know, this portion or save that huge tree in my yard? I just would love people to take a, you know, take a second and step back and think if there's a better way to do something that everyone can win in the environment and you.
Learn to coexist a little better with the natural world around us.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to close. Excellent. Well, thank you for your time. And I'm sure we'll be in touch, and especially if any of the listeners want to contact you, we'll include the info in the show notes. So.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you, Stephen.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. And by the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.